Accession number 16729, Mr. William Ridley, reel 14.
Mr. Ridley, reel 14. When you arrived in Haifa, what happened to you then?
Well, we had a day off in Haifa. And we just wandered around the streets and till the time came to go. And we went up towards Syria. And we were right on the borders and on the coast, and it was a beautiful valley, and it seemed to be a holding camp for the troops, like, you know, because there was all sorts there. There was all you know, all regiments and whatever. And the place I recall was called Azib. And we were there, I don't think we were there a great length of time, I think it was maybe a week or something like that. But again, we were hanging around most of the time. There was nowhere to go, you know, there was no town or anything like that. It was just, I think there was a naffy there or something, or, you know, somewhere to spend your money for. But that's about all. And then...
What date was this?
Couldn't tell you the dates, nowhere. It could be around November time, like, you know. And then we were put on the trucks, and we started our journey to what eventually turned out to be Iraq, and I'm not sure there's a different name for that. I always understood it to be called the Syrian Desert. Now, I don't know, I think that I've looked on the maps since then, but I can't find such a thing as the Syrian Desert, but it's the road through Palestine, across the Jordan, and we crossed the Jordan, and we went up into, no, that's wrong, yeah, I cancel that. We crossed the Jordan, and when we were going through there, we were escorted part of the way by that magnificent body of men that was founded by... Pasha Glob, or Glob Pasha, and they were absolutely immaculate. With some of them had camels, if I'm not mistaken, but everything was shining, and they were absolutely a credit to anybody. And we went on through the magnificent desert there with volcanic rock, great big boulders of volcanic rock, and we've actually followed the pipeline from Palestine, and I can't remember how long it took, but I think we were on the way about a week, 6 or 7 days. And you wouldn't believe this, but they decided to have a regimental guard mountain in the middle of the desert. And I'm not sure if the band was there. I'm not sure, but I know the bugles was there. And we were put on regimental guard. And everything had to be polished up. Your boots had to be polished and shining. And they carried some of the lads on parade, so they didn't get their shoes dusty. And this was hundreds of miles away from anybody. There wasn't a camel in sight or nobody in sight, but they would have the regimental guard mounting on this thing. And it was quite an uncomfortable journey because there was you were sitting on packs and you weren't sitting in seats or anything like that. You were just sitting on the side of the truck on rolls of blankets or whatever it happens to be handy, like, you know. And it can be quite damaging to your rear end and what have you, like, you know. And I can tell you that we had a lot of problems with the other parts of your body down there, you know. And in fact, I know one lad that was so inflamed that when we reached Baghdad, he was sent to a VD hospital, you know. And the poor lad hadn't been nowhere near anything like that sort of thing.
What time in the morning would you usually set off on the next stage?
Dawn. There was one wonderful illustration. We got halfway across this desert, and the trucks was driven by Arabs, or either, I don't know whether they were Egyptians or who they were, but they were Arabs, and We pulled up, and it was a little bit of a hilly place, and we were started put the trucks into a bit like a cowboy, where they wanted to put the caravan, you know, and the stage coaches, you know, and we used to put them in a circle, like, you know, and a bit like that. And the Arab drivers of the trucks said that they went on strike. And they said they wouldn't move until they got X number of piastas extra, or whatever it was, they were dinars or whatever. And so the colonel says, well, he says, right, he says, I'll have the answer for you tomorrow morning, and X time on tomorrow morning. And so the following day, all the drivers turned up, and the colonel gets in front of them, and he said, I'm afraid you're not going to get any more extra money. And he says, if you don't get onto those trucks and drive us the rest of the journey, if you cast your eyes around the ridge of this depression here, you'll see a number of machine guns. And if you're not on that truck within a certain length of time, these machine guns will open fire. And round the perimeter were the Bren guns, all the Bren the anti-aircraft and the Bren gun carriers, and all them was all on the ledges, and all the lads made themselves boldly visible. And I can assure you, those Arabs did not hesitate. They were immediately in that cab, and they were away in quite a short time. But the colonel sorted it out. It was quite efficient, I can tell you.
You said after dawn, did you have breaks during the day?
Yes. There was nothing laid on. You got to have a set rations, and you brewed up on the way. Which was good training for the desert to come. Like, we used to put the we had the half the water used to come up in like 4 gallon tins with a hole in the top for to put the water in, actually. And what we used to do, we used to cut the tin in two, bend the edges over, and the bottom part that had the hole in, we used to put the sand in, and then get some petrol and put the petrol into the sand, mix it in with the sand, and then the other half of the tin, you filled it with your water, put it in, you put it on the top, and you strike the match, and you just put it in the sand, and made an excellent stove, like, you know. And I remember one. I don't know what had happened, like, but whether it stopped on just for some reason, we thought it was a brew up, like, you know, and it pulled away, of course, in, before we could get the precious tea drunk, like, you know. So we had to lift the precious tea into the back of the truck, and scalding hot. And of course, you've got there was no roads. It was all across country, so you can imagine what was happening with the tea. Everybody got a drop, and they had scars to prove it. And we lost that. We didn't get our tea, we had to dump it. Like, but that was it was all across country. It was all, you know, it was running more or less parallel with the oil pipe, you know, that was coming till we come to just to Baghdad.
And you're travelling, you say, across country. In what kind of formation were you travelling?
Just in, like, just like a cowboys, just like caravans, you know, one after the other, like, you know. And it was great. It's just like being a cowboy, you know, it was great. I mean, it was, the lads was, I enjoyed it, like, you know. The only thing was that you were sore, you know. You got sore with sitting in, and I mean, I can't tell you exactly how long it took, but I know we eventually got to Habania.
Just before we come there, you mentioned, other than than your parade that you said you had out in the wilderness, it must have been a very dusty ride. You must have been covered with dust.
It wasn't too bad in cases, because most of it was rock, you know. Most of it was rock and shale and that sort of thing, like, you know. But there was the other thing is that when you were in the truck, of course we weren't desert orientated by this time. We were still rookies as far as the wilderness is concerned, but we did learn to take the front part of our canvas off the front of the truck, so that the breeze was coming straight through. Well, if you left the canvas on, it used to suck the dust into the truck, like, you know, which wasn't very pleasant. But we learned quick, you know.
You would stay for lunch. Did you have a lunch break? Dinner time break?
Oh, well, I think it depended on where it was conducive for the stop, like, you know. I mean, because when we got into Iraq, it hadn't been long that they'd had a revolution or something like that. There was some, you know, because there was dead horses and dead animals lying, camels and that, lying all over the place. Well, not all over the place, but then you come across them. We passed Habania, but we didn't. We saw it. We saw the buildings. And if I might be wrong here, but I thought I saw a sort of a lake, you know, like a, I don't know, it might have been a, but a, it looked like a, it looked as if it was beside a lake, like, you know. But well, it was, because as you well know, you can look in the desert, then you look back in the desert and you look at the trucks, and the trucks is coming out the sky. You know, they're literally just like they're coming out the sky. The difference between the ground and the trucks was all sky, you know, and they're coming out the sky, like, you know. And
did you not stop there?
No, we were good way from Habania. We passed close to it. You could see it, like, you know. But you see, the RAF had come up, turned up with our armoured cars, you know, with the Rolls Royce cars, like, you know. We saw them parading around, like, you know. But it was only recently, before we got there, that there had been a revolution, like, you know. And when we got
Who went on ahead to select any particular staging point where you would stop for the night? Someone given that task?
Well, so I couldn't tell you that. Oh, no way I could tell
you that.
It wasn't
your section?
Well, it wasn't our section, no. We didn't... Not to my recollection. I was never on one. But there again, you see, we used to have outriders and on motorbikes and that sort of thing. You know, they used to do that sort of thing, like, you know.
When you reached the staging point, the stopping point, you see that the vehicles were put in a circle. What did you do then?
Well, I used to blow up.
Were you sleeping in tents at all?
No. If I remember, we kept on the deck, I think, as far as I remember. Of course, the only time it was the cold was at night time, like, you know. I can't remember ever being in canvas there. Either slept in the truck out like that, like, you know. I can't remember ever being there.
So you had your main meal, presumably, at that point?
Well, you just ate. There was nothing. I can't remember any cooked stuff coming up, you know. I mean, we were on the move, you know. And probably we might have got some. I just can't remember. Hard tack and a tin of bully, which was normally what you got, like, you know. But I can't remember what food was involved, like, you know.
What happened as you approached Baghdad?
Well, when we got there, we got just on the outskirts of Baghdad, but we camped just outside of Baghdad. We built bivouacked outside of there. And when the time came to move, we had strict instructions. On no account must we have anything to do with the population, and we had to arrange the seating in the trucks that we had to sit with our back to the sideboard, you know, the sideboard of the truck, and with a rifle between my legs. Of course, your rifle was 99 and a half times it was fastened to you, like, you know. And you have to sit with your rifle between your legs, and on no account must you move, must you have anything to do with it. If any of the populace made any attempt to climb on the trucks or anything like that, we hadn't to do anything at all. And whatever happened, as we went through, they were pelting stones that way. And one wonderful thing was that they hit one of the captains and knocked him off his motorbike, which pleased me a great deal, like, you know. And because he was a captain, he wasn't very popular, like, you know. Well, the Iraqis were turned out to be good friends for us after he knocked the bloke off his bike. Anyway, that's a bit facetious. But it wasn't until we got through Baghdad, and we billeted out in the wilderness, and we got there just before dark, and we found that we were next to either a battalion or a company or something. I think it would be a battalion of Gurkhas. And we found out why the discipline of not moving in the truck, we thought was a bit strange. But what had happened was Johnny Gurkha had went through the day before we went, and one of the Iraqis had jumped on the truck and spat at the driver, spit in his face. So Johnny just pulled the truck up, and out comes the kukris, and there was five or six new graves in Baghdad, and that was the reason why we were told not to do anything at all. But to cover that little story, the follow, because we knew that we had heard about the Gurkhas and their reputation and all that, like, you know, and uh, they were like they are still today, a little bit of heroes amongst us all, like, you know. And most of us still today have a great affection for Johnny. And what happened, again, you've got to understand that this was out in the wilderness. There was nothing, absolutely nothing. It was desert and brushland, and we were billeted, and I think we were in tents at this time. And we used to send, we used to be on patrol, and used to go out on, not as a sentry, like an ordinary sentry duty. You went with a loaded rifle, at the high port. You didn't use your sling or anything like that. You carried it in front of you like this, and your mate used to be within sight of you. You weren't supposed to let them out. Got to understand, it was absolutely pitch black. There was no moon, there was no light. And this, the first night we were the lost, his mate come back and he's lost him. I don't know where he is. And there wasn't much they could do about it, like, but in the morning at dawn, the sentry come staggering in, like, you know. Of course, he got reprimanded. Where the hell are you been, like, you know? He says, well, I'll tell you where I've been. I said, I've been standing out in the dark there by myself all night. And what had happened was, he had been on the black man of the two, you see, and he got challenged by one of the Gurkhas, because the Gurkhas patrol had touched our patrol, you know, like the boundaries had sort of crossed, like, you know. And he says, he challenged us in the language, and he says, I didn't know what the hell to say. He says, and now the Gurkhas are now the fire force, and that's questions after. He says, so I didn't answer. And he says, I've been standing there till the daylight, and that was it. And that's a true story, that one, you know. But we had a bit giggle about that as well.
You'll be moving now into the oil area.
Yeah, we came into Kirkuk, and we were. It was. I was never in the town. And that was where I got my Lance Corporal stipe. I was made the Dizzy Heights of Lance Corporal at Kirkuk. And I got a new hat. Get me head into it. And we were only there, weren't there a great deal. And they decided to march us to Mosul. Two Rivers.
Great and Little Zab.
Great and Little Zab. Seemingly what had happened was that the Germans was advancing to such an extent, and they were taking Rostov at the time, and rumour was having it that the Germans would be coming through the Kurdistan and down through Iraq and into the Middle East that way. So we had to, that's why we were sent up to block that happening. So we left, they decided to march from Kirkuk to the Two Rivers. I think it's not very far off Mosul. I think it's maybe about 10 miles from before you get to Mosul. I could be contradicting that, but it was about that. And which was quite a good hike. I think it was about 80 miles or something like that, 80 odd mile. And it wasn't on roads, it was mostly across country. And any infantryman will tell you, if you're marching cross country, it's a damn sight harder than what it is marching on the road. Because you don't know where your feet's going and don't know which way you're going and tipping over. And the second day, second or third day, I developed a blister on my heel, and I took my shoe off, and well, because you had a foot inspection after every match, like, you know, and the officer sent this to the MO, and I had to get it attended to. Fortunately, it wasn't actually on the heel itself; it was in the little crevice at each side of your Achilles tendon, you know. It was like a blister there, and it looked a blister, and of course it was all raw, like, you know. And the captain, the doctor, says, excuse marching for them. I said, no. She says, I'm telling you, he says, you're off your feet. He says, and you. And that following day, I rode in the truck. No, but again, I would never ride again on the truck. And I said, no. So I didn't. The next day, I went back and I marched. And the rubbish that you got when you passed the lads on the road, and you felt real sick, I felt terrible. And anyway, the next day I marched into the rest of the journey, like, and it was hard. It was hard going across country.
So the lads let you know when you went past in the truck.
Oh yeah. Oh, you got the raspberries and the insults and very flowery language, you know, and scheming bees and whatever, you know, and get ya. But it was all in good fun. They didn't really mean it. They knew that most of it was couldn't make it.
And, what finally was your destination?
Oh, it was in the. Oh, what a question to ask. It was right in the middle of nowhere. It was on the near the banks of one of the rivers, you know. I couldn't tell you where I was. It was bitter cold. It was freezing cold, raining, and we had, by this time that we had been issued with most of the stuff we had now was Indian, because we're in the Indian, we come under Indian command, and my boots was Indian, you know. And of course, they're all flat feet in Indian. I mean, this is one of the reasons how I got blisters, to be quite honest. And because I always had good feet, I've still got good feet, like, you know, never had trouble with my feet. And we were right up in the Kurdistan, and it was bitter cold, and snowing and raining, and it was getting near Christmas at the time. And we were all marking sites, and, you know, like, sort of finding out where the high parts of the place for to put the trenches and that, and digging trenches. And I don't know what the religion, whether it's Muslim or whatever, that the Kurds were. But they buried their dead on hills, on the hillside. And of course, what's the best position for the dig? A defensive position was the hill. So what was happening was that we were digging graves up and skeletons up and what have you, and somebody would shout, "Hey, Geordie!" And you, "Aye!" And then they stick a big skull in your face. And there was one great incident. The signal lads, they dug a grave up, like, and the wired this skeleton together, you know, the arms and legs and heads and whatever, and they put it in the sergeant's bed. And the sergeant, when he come to the bed, and there was the skeleton lying in his bed. Wasn't very pleased, I can very recall.